Welcome, everyone. If you have interest in hearing from a guy that's been in the industry for over 30 years and built a 4,500-unit multifamily portfolio, you are going to want to hear what Glenn Gonzalez has to say. Glenn has so much experience and wisdom to share. The thing I love best is one story after the other, with examples of Glenn just choosing to do the right thing. On to the intro.
Welcome to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show. Each week, you will learn how to grow your wealth through real estate investing, be introduced to the players that are getting it done, and learn how you can get involved. And now, here's your host, Darren Batchelder.
A little background on Glenn Gonzalez before we start the show. Glenn started out as a maintenance man, then transitioned into property management as a W-2 employee. He saw how his work was improving the valuation of the multifamily properties that he managed, and he saw how the owners were becoming wealthy upon a sale of the property. He pushed past his fear and figured out a way to become an owner rather than an employee. I love how he's focused on giving back, paying it forward, and creating a culture of gratitude and loyalty. Now, on to the show. Hello, everyone. Today, we have a special treat. I've got Glenn Gonzalez here with us. Glenn, appreciate you coming on the show.
Hey, Darren. Pretty excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, how I know Glenn, this is kind of an interesting story. So I actually had hit Glenn's partner on the show through episode 12, David Tupin. And I had come in contact with David through social media and set up a meeting. I'm in Dallas and he's in Austin, and set up a meeting with David down in Austin. I actually rented a Harley and drove down there and had a great time doing that. But you know, when I got down there, David sent me a text and said, "Hey, do you mind if I bring my business partners also?" And I was like, "Absolutely." And so Glenn joined us for that lunch meeting, and I am just so thankful to get an opportunity to meet Glenn. He has a ton of experience and is just a super guy. So I can't wait to hear what he has to say, and I hope that all you listeners enjoy this. So Glenn, with that, just high level recap, you know, I know you've been in the business for ton of years. You know, how many years have you been in the multifamily business? How many units have you, you know, owned in total?
Great. You know, thanks, Darren. You know, I'm glad you enjoyed your trip on the motorcycle. First of all, I like to ride too, you know, and it was kind of neat to see you pull up. I'm like, I don't know who this guy is, but I already like him.
You know, that's funny. Yeah, you ended up telling me that you've got a great Goldwing and that you and your wife like to ride. So that's fantastic.
We do. We do. Well, kind of high level, Darren, you know, I started off in the industry 30 years ago as a maintenance man, and I was in the industry for years as a kind of a W-2. I came up through the ranks as a, you know, like a leasing agent, a property manager, and then a regional manager, and really made that my career. And along the way, I got really good at property management. Well, about 7 years ago, I started buying my own apartment complexes. And it, I acquired about almost just under $300 million in assets, 4,500 units over Texas, and just really, you know, had a very successful run at that. And so, you know, I started off as a maintenance guy, grew to 4,500 units. I started my own property management company and did that in-house, and later sold the management company. Then I also sold a big, huge chunk of that portfolio in the last, you know, 18 months, 2 years. So as you know, the market was really climbing really high and people were paying a lot for apartments while I was selling when they were buying. So it's been a good run. So I'm excited to share some of my experiences, both the successes and the failures. I'm honored to be on your show. I'm glad you have a motorcycle. So
I actually don't have one. I rented that one to drive down there. But I love riding. So, So yeah, it was such a treat to get to meet you. So when I spoke with David on the episode, episode 12, he shared with me how you guys came in contact and how you became partners. But I would love to hear your perspective on it because, you know, David's a young guy, you know, in his mid 20s, and he was just kind of breaking into the space. And then you've got 30 years experience. You know, how did two people like that come together?
Yeah, how do we even mesh like that? And actually, it was an interesting timing, Darren. I think all things kind of happen for a reason. I was on the tail end of breaking up with a previous business partner because we had different sets of morals, per se, and a different outlook on business and life. And so I was going about this and doing kind of my own thing. And I met David Tupin we were on a mastermind together, a multifamily mastermind. And I got to know him, neat guy. You know, I call him a kid, and I shouldn't do that because he's my business.
I called him a kid on the episode at one point too.
Yeah, the funny thing is he's like a kid in a grown man's, you know, world, right?
Right.
Like a very experienced entrepreneur. I love that. So I got to know him. I loved his mentality. I liked, you know, his outlook on life, his ambition. But really what drew me to him was his ability to underwrite and understand the numbers behind this business. And that is such a key thing. But Darren, I was on the tail end of a bad breakup, right? Just like any relationship, you know, you don't want a rebound relationship.
Yeah.
So I met David and I was putting together a deal and he's like, I want to partner with you on this deal. And I'm like, I don't know, man, why don't we do this? Why don't we just buy this deal together? Not as under one umbrella, but you could be my partner on this. I'll be your partner on this one deal. Let's see how it goes. And I was amazed. You know what I mean? I was pleased. He grasped everything. He was organized. He understood the numbers. There were a bunch of questions that he had. And based on my 30 or 40 transactions that I've done, I suggest we do this, 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 and this. He goes, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm glad we caught that. And so he was very open to, you know, I don't want to say doing things my way, but he's very open to maybe an alternative look at how you do it, how you handle a transaction, just based on experience, right?
Right.
And it went so well, and I liked his personality, and I liked his morals, and I kind of checked everything out. So after that went so well, we had the opportunity to do a second and a third deal. I'm like, dude, why don't we just partner? And that's where Obsidian came to be, right? Obsidian is now, you know, David, Glenn, and actually Mike now. There's three of us. And he does the acquisitions. I pretty much, you know, kind of help with, I'm the CEO of the company, majority owner of the company. David's fantastic at finance, underwriting. Mike is exceptional at operations and asset management and all that. So it's kind of the perfect little partnership. Yeah. We all have. And we all enjoy each other. But I think, you know, we might get into this later in the show about good partners versus bad partners, but you really have to enjoy the people you do business with.
Right. I would completely agree. And so, you know, you said a couple things there. One was that, you know, he was willing to be open-minded and listen to the wisdom of somebody that's been in the field for a long time. And so on my first syndication, I partnered with a gentleman by the name of Raj Gupta out of Chicago, and he's a very experienced multifamily investor. And, you know, I pretty much run the point day to day in terms of asset management, and I'll come to him and say, hey, look, this is, you know, what I want to do in this situation. And most of the time he's like, Darren, run with it. But every now and then he says, He doesn't say, Darren, you're dumb. You know, he just says, you may want to consider this. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think about it and I'm like, that's a really good idea. And that's because he's got a lot more experience. So, you know, putting those two heads together is better than, you know, making some rookie mistakes.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The partnership really kind of, we leverage off each other. You know, David doesn't mind staying up till midnight or one in the morning working on a deal. You know, at my age and all my experience, it's like, another deal, right? You know, in the morning, you know, but he just is so eager and excited. But some of like Raj did for you, I'll suggest some things to David. It's like, if you do this, this, and this, it's going to save you a lot of time and effort and energy.
Right.
And it went, it goes really well. So
that's huge. So another thing I wanted to ask you was, look, you've got all this experience, you bought up to 4,500 units. Like, why did you even join a mastermind? Like, you are super experienced. Like, why did you even join that group?
That's a great thing. I have actually a chapter in my book, about networking and relationships. And I will tell you that the very first deal I ever bought was a 44 unit complex, came out of a relationship, because I was sitting across the table from a guy named John Gibson, volunteering my time at an apartment association function. And out of that relationship and friendship came a multifamily deal. Later, a friendship relationship with a gentleman by the name of Ed sold me 1,500 units, 8 apartment complexes, because of a friendship and a relationship and networking. So I'll join these groups and I'll participate. Sorry about that. I got a little distracted.
No worries.
You're going to laugh at this. It's pouring down rain. My sunroof was open and I'm texting somebody in my office to please go close my door. I don't want to stop this. That's funny.
You were talking about the mastermind and the networking and the power of just, networking and building relationships.
Yes. Yes. So really I join these things and I participate and I love to go do that simply because of the opportunities that come out of networking. And the mastermind, can I share with you one story that was just fantastic?
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
I sold the deal to a gentleman out of Dallas, and he bought my apartment complex. And we're sitting around this mastermind. I never met him in person, right? But I'm at a mastermind, and I think we're in San Diego or Las Vegas or something. And there's 20 people on this little mastermind group. It's not very big. We're doing introductions. And this one guy across stands up. He goes, I tell you my name, but really what I want to do is I want to introduce the guy across the hall or across the table. And he pointed at me and I looked and I'm like, dude, do I know this guy?
Right.
And he pointed at me. He goes, let me tell you a story about that guy, Glenn Gonzalez. And he said, he sold me an apartment complex. And 1 week before closing, the chiller died. These big chillers are pretty expensive pieces of equipment at an apartment complex. And he said, my earnest money had already become non-refundable. Closing was already set. Glenn could have done one of two things. One, he could have not told me about the problem and we still would have closed, or he could have put a Band-Aid on it and then the problem would be mine. He said, but you know what Glenn did? He went and purchased a new chiller for me and got it installed and escrowed the money so that the money was available so that when it closed, I got a new chiller out of the deal.
Wow.
And he said, in this industry, when you're buying and selling apartment complexes, people are so out to make the ultimate buck and they are so willing to kind of stick it to the next guy that there are very few people in this industry that have the integrity that Glenn did. And I don't say that to brag, but here it is. I'm sitting across the room at a mastermind from a gentleman, I only knew his name. I never met him in person. And he took the opportunity to introduce me because of this experience that he had.
Wow, that's an awesome story. And you know what? When you did it, you never knew that conversation was going to happen.
No, I didn't.
But what an amazing thing to have happen. And everybody else in the room, just looks at you with a completely different, not that they didn't already have a ton of respect for you, but that's just another example that's like, wow,
Yeah. And this is leading up to something that I want to make a point, but I'm going to share with you one other experience that just happened to me yesterday. I was out working on a ranch and a gal named Kim called me. She bought from me a 650 unit apartment complex up in Dallas, Fort Worth.
Is it Kim Radiker?
Yes. You know, Kim.
I'm invested in one of her deals.
Yeah. She called me yesterday, just out of the blue. It was like 8:30 at night. And I picked up and, "Hi, Glenn. Hi, Kim. How are you?" She's like, "I got a quick question. I have a gentleman that wants to buy one of my apartment complexes, and he put you down as a reference because you sold him two deals." I said, "Oh, well, what's his name?" She told me his name. And I said, "You know what? He was a good buyer. And I think it would be a safe bet because he performed. He performed on time and he didn't retrade me. So if you're going to do business with him, I don't think you should be nervous." And she said, "Glenn, of all the people that I have ever spoken or done business with, you are one of the most stand-up guys in this industry. And if you say somebody's, you know, a stand-up person, I believe you." And I told her, I said, "Kim, that's like one of the nicest compliments you can give me, is that you trust me and that I've, you know, got a fairly good reputation." And it just really meant the world to me, Darren. And I can't tell you, you know, how grateful I was, because in this industry, your name and your reputation is going to win you deals or lose you deals.
Right.
It just will.
You know, that's huge. So, you know, when we met, and when I talked to David, you know, it came out that you had this book, right? And called Maintenance Man to Millionaire. So we were going to be doing this podcast. So I went and bought the book on Amazon and I read it over the weekend. And look, I don't know if this will come to fruition or not, but I have to tell you that there were a number of times I'm reading this book and I would stop and I would like look over at my wife and I'd say, "Tiffany, I'm going to do business with this guy. This guy is just a good guy." And I mean, so I don't know if it'll happen or not, but like, look, I've had three interactions with you. One, you know, at a lunch. Two, I had the interview with the episode with David Tupin, which he went on and on and on about how great a partner you were. And he just talked about how humble you were. And, you know, I got that sense too when we met for lunch that day. I'm like, you know, a guy with that much experience, he really could kind of lord it over you, as, you know, relatively new people in the industry. You know, you could treat people at, you know, lower than you, beneath you, but that did not come across at all. You were very, very approachable and it was evident that you got along very well with the rest of your team. So I do want to spend, because there was so much great stuff that I read in that book, I do want to spend some time just talking about some things that you talked about in the book. And listeners, I would highly recommend you go out and buy this book. I mean, it's on Amazon. It's called Maintenance Man to Millionaire. And it's not like a book that's going to take you a month to read. I read it, you know, in 2-3 days, but there's just so much wisdom packed in there.
They could sit down and read it straight for like an hour and a half, you know, and, you know, maybe 2 hours and be done with it. So, you know, it's an easy read. I really wanted, Darren, for people to get a sense of my personality through the book, instead of just, you know, a language or a, how to, right? I didn't want it to be too technical. So right. It was filled with, you know, Glennisms or my takeaways.
which fits in great with kind of my approach. You know, when I set up this podcast, you know, most podcasts are kind of in that 25 to 40 minute range. And, you know, I built this one to be more like an hour. But, you know, one of the things that I really wanted to have happen was not just talk about a deal, you know, was that, you know, if you're a passive investor and you're listening to this, you know, what's important to me is that I get to know the people I'm going to do business with. So it's more important not just to understand the deal and some of the specifics of the deal, but actually understand the person. So that's why I made this podcast longer. And that's why we're going to spend a little bit more time talking together, is so that people do get to know you at a deeper level. And if you read his book, you'll get even a bigger, deeper dive into getting to know Glenn.
There are sections of my book that made me cry when I was, you know, putting that information in it, because there were times in my life that I was at a serious, serious crossroads in my life, whether it was being bankrupt or coming close to losing my wife due to an illness. And all of those things led to who I am today and how I treat people and why I'm on earth, and my gratitude all those experiences of, you know, including being a maintenance man, you know, when big investors or big wigs would come out to the properties, they would talk to the regional manager or the manager, but they never gave 2 cents about us maintenance guys. Well, my approach is those maintenance guys, they know everything about the property. I go out there, they're the first ones I talk to. I'll go talk to the manager second. I'm going to talk to the maintenance guy first. So
that's smart. And actually it made me rethink, you know, the property that I'm currently managing. I spent a lot of time with the leasing person. We've had a lot of turnover on the maintenance side. You know, it's tough to find a good maintenance guy that wants to stay and doesn't kind of bounce around. But you're right. They're the ones that are going into all the units and you know, they're the front person on the customer service side. But, you know, you touched on something that I did want to talk about. I was going to do it later on, but let's hit up on it now is that, you know, talk about God's influence in your life. And there's going to be a lot of spoiler alerts just to let everybody know on this book, but there was a time in the book where you actually came before the church and you surrendered and then there was a miracle that happened after that. Can you tell that story?
I can. Yeah. Thank you for asking. And I'm going to do my absolute best to not get emotional. But
it's okay. I actually fought off tears when in that section. I'm just being real.
You know, my wife had been slowly, gradually getting sicker and sicker. You know, her lungs were failing and she, you know, got so sick that she eventually was on oxygen full time and then eventually in a wheelchair because she just didn't have the strength or energy to get, you know, from here to there walking. So, you know, that was, so of course there was lots of prayers. I had my friends praying. She received priesthood blessings. You know, we would fast and dedicate prayers to Heavenly Father to change this situation. And I just wasn't prepared to lose my wife. And so, of course, I'm drawing down all these, you know, every resource I could, you know, to you know, praying for a miracle. And it just, she was getting worse and worse and worse. And really, it was in July of 2015. Or actually, let me back up a little bit.
She needed a double lung transplant.
Double lung transplant. And she was diagnosed with, you know, and put on the transplant list in June. And at the very end of June. And the doctor said, well, she's got a small frame and we could find her a set of lungs, but it will be very difficult because of the size of her chest cavity needs a small. And they said 6 months to a year, and we should be able to find your wife a set of lungs. And at that moment, Darren, it was just very sobering because at the rate she was declining, we both, Heidi and I, realized she didn't have 6 months to live.
Right.
And a year was just, she wouldn't last that long. I mean, at this point, she's, you know, 85 pounds on oxygen full time and in a wheelchair and declining daily. So I'm like, so of course I'm looking for a miracle and it just wasn't coming. So I went through this emotion of frustration. It's like, why God? And a lot of people go through this. Why is this happening? You know, to good people, bad thing to good people, et cetera, et cetera. And I just really wanted my will to be done. And I came to the conclusion, maybe Heavenly Father has work for my sweet wife to do on the other side of the veil. You know, maybe after death, there's something for her to do, you know, and, or she's already paid her dues here on earth. I don't know. I came to this conclusion and then I realized I'm not in charge anyways. There's nothing I could do. He's in charge. I just need to realize that. So, and really what the word was, Darren, was trust. I needed to trust my Father in heaven that whatever his will be done, right? And let me quote the Savior, not my will be done, but thine be done. And when I got to that point, it was I actually stood up in front of a meeting and made this big declaration. I shared my testimony that I'm not in charge. I trust the Lord. And if he wants to take her home, meaning death, I'm okay with that. I'm not hoping for that, but I'm okay with that. And that was on July the 3rd. And she got the call on July, 4 days later, to get a double lung transplant.
Oh, I just got goosebumps again. And I just read that this past weekend. That's so amazing. And what you didn't mention, which I read in the book, was it sounded like you were very, very angry and very frustrated leading up to that. And so that was a difficult process for you to get to that point. And then you finally were able to release that. And then all of a sudden the miracle happened.
Yeah. And you know, it was frustrating because here she is, she's 45 years old and she doesn't drink, she doesn't smoke, she doesn't do drugs, she does yoga, she eats really well. And I make fun of her because I'm fat and she's healthy. And through this, and it just didn't seem fair. So I did, I surrendered. I turned it over to the Lord and it worked out. And, you know, it doesn't always work out for all people, but.
Right. That's what I said to my wife too. I said, I'm so glad that the end of this, of that story turned out that way. It doesn't always happen that way, but, you know, it sure does feel good, you know, that when it does. So.
Darren, let me share with you one of my takeaways from this, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a principle that could be applied to life. You know, my wife, prior to all of this going on and up leading up to this, my wife, she would drink, she would go get a water bottle out of the fridge. She would drink part of it or half of it, and then she'd set it down. A little while later, she'd go get another water bottle, get it out of the fridge. And now there's one in the bedroom. There's one in the kitchen. There's one in the dining room. There's two in the car. And I'm like, honey, gosh, why don't you just finish the one you open? Why do you have to open these and leave them all over the house? And she's like, what does it matter? And I'm like, well, gosh, honey, just... you know, just finish the one that you opened. But then I thought to myself, what happens if Heidi's gone and there's no water bottles laying around the house? I think I would really miss that. You know what I mean? And I started thinking about water bottles and really how insignificant is a water bottle relative to companionship with my eternal companion. I mean,
I mean, there's so many, you know, if you've been married for a while, there's so many different little things that may irk one person or the other. And, you know, I was reading that and I was, you know, reflecting on a number of things that, you know, aren't the water bottle situation, but similar type things that I really need to, you know, let go and, you know.
Or change your perspective, Darren, because now my wife's still the same wife. And guess what? She still opens water bottles and she's got a couple laying around. The difference is how grateful I am.
Yeah.
That those water bottles are still laying around the house.
Hey, I'm sorry.
And really, it's part of who she is. It's her character. It's her personality. And it's still here. Now it doesn't bother me. It did before, but it doesn't bother me now. Now I'm grateful.
And now she's... You know, I've seen pictures of you guys on Facebook. It looks like she's made a full recovery and she's, you know, living a normal life.
That's Facebook for you. It makes it look that way. She takes 20 pills a day for antidepressants. She gives herself a shot 3 or 4 times a day. And so it's a lot to manage. But she is doing fantastic. And this problem will never go away. She'll be on rejection medicines for the rest of her life and her body will never accept a set of lungs from somebody else. Not like other organs that will kind of, you know, be accepted by the body. So a lot of effort goes into where she is and she's doing fantastic. We play with the grandkids. We travel. You know, she does yoga. You know, she's beautiful inside and out, you know.
So, well, great story. And thank you so much for sharing. Hey, you talk about, you know, in the book, there was one part that was talked about the art and creativity of the deal. And so I'm relatively new to this space. I've been in the real estate world for about 3 years and I've read that in other books. I also saw that at one point you worked at Equity Residential in Seattle. I was wondering if you knew Sam Zell. I read his book, Am I Being Too Subtle? But he talks about the creativity. And, you know, for me, doesn't really the word creativity doesn't necessarily go hand in hand with real estate. But there is a lot of creativity that can and be put into place into making a deal work. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that creativity can be applied to so many different aspects of a multifamily deal. You know, it's whether you get creative on how you structure your partnership. It can be how creative you get on the improvements that you do to the apartments. It could be how creative you get in managing and retaining residents versus maybe wanting to turn over residents, if that's the thing. And there's so many different creative things that you could do. So, you know, I've talked to people in the past about, you know, what will make an apartment complex a successful apartment complex and profitable. When I say successful, I mean profitable for its investors. And really, there's three things in my world that I've learned that if they are either very mismanaged, you know, in a lot of areas, the rents are significantly below the potential rents or market, or the property is, you know, quite deferred, right? And ugly and just needs to be improved. Any one of those three that you could find will make you money. You get two out of those three and fix two of the three, you're going to make yourself a lot of money. But say you find a deal that's got all three of those problems. We call that a grand slam. So there's lots of things there, but you can apply the same creativity and retention, and you know, people can have just a great retention program on a nice new apartment complex where you don't need improvements and there's no bad management, but yet you can just reduce the turnover and people might even pay more to live there because they like the culture of that apartment community. And they might pay more than market rate because of a creative environment that you created. You know, so there's a lot of different ways.
That makes sense. So you mentioned the word culture. That was something that was very important in your book, not just for deals, but also, you know, building your team, both internal and external, but your company and the people that you hire and the approach that you take. So talk to us about the kind of culture that you're trying to instill in your team.
You know, that's so dear to my heart, you know, that I don't even know where to start.
Well, I can start you off with I'll share a story that from the book then you can kind of, you know, use that as a launching pad for. So you had a female that was working for you, and she was a great worker, and helped the company a great deal. And one day she called in and said she couldn't come to work. And instead of just saying, okay, you inquired as to why. And she said that, you know, she had an issue with her car. The battery had an issue and
get to work. Yeah. That was Leslie. Yeah.
Well, talk about that story. And you know, look, that was one event, but then that's kind of the culture that you want to create.
Very much, Darren. Very much. Leslie did. She called me. I can't make it to work. I'm like, what's up? She's like, my battery's dead. I'm like, okay, no problem. Where are you at? She's like, I'm at home. I'm like, okay. So I knew where she lived because I had her address, right? She's on payroll. She's a dedicated employee. Dedicated. And this is a gal that comes in early and stays late, and she does all the bookkeeping. She probably had 15 or 20 properties that she did her bookkeeping for, and just behind the scenes, right? Salt of the earth. Well, here she's faced with the challenge. She can't. So I go to her house. I get in, and a couple things, right? Yep, the car won't start. But you also look around. It's filthy. She doesn't have time to wash her car or even clean it out because she's working all the time. And, you know, I get in and you could tell her, you know, she's got the little sticker in the windshield. The oil hadn't been changed for a long time. So I said, well, Leslie, at least jumpstart your car and see if it'll start. She's like, okay. So I got it started. And of course I had the keys. I shut the hood and I said, I'll be back in a minute. And she's like, where are you going? I said, I'll be back. Just go back to work. I went, I got her oil changed. I bought a new battery. I put it in her car. I ran it through the car wash, you know, had the inside detailed. And then I went back and I parked it and I gave her the keys. And she could tell just by looking at the outside. She's like, what have you done? And I said, the right thing. So I handed her the keys And, you know, and Leslie was so grateful, but she just cried. She didn't know what to say. She said, thank you. I didn't have to do that. And I'm like, I know I didn't have to do that. But I said, Leslie, if I step back and I look at all the things that you've done for our company, you've probably made our company hundreds of thousands of dollars because of what you contribute. So a battery and an oil change is nothing. But really what I want you to know is how grateful I am that you work for us. And I even noticed that she had a cracked windshield maybe, you know, 3 or 4 months later or 6 months later. I don't remember the date really. And while she was here at the same office as I am, I just called a mobile windshield repair, gave them the make and model in the year. And, you know, they come out to the office. And I asked her if I could borrow the keys and got her windshield repaired and they left. And she again is like, she didn't have to do that. But you know how cheap windows are, a windshield? I mean, you could buy a windshield for a Mazda for like $300, $200. I mean, it's not a lot of money. But Darren, what she got out of that, she's told me, she's like, Glenn, I will never work for another person ever.
Oh, wow.
Right? I mean, and like you said earlier, you said maintenance guys are hard to find. So if you apply that same logic of taking care of them, people love to feel appreciated. Pay is important. Benefits are important. But really the culture and feeling appreciation and gratitude, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. I mean, and that goes to your reputation too. So, you know, you've got reputation in the industry with buyers and sellers and brokers, but also when you're building, you know, a company, you've got reputation for what you do for the people that work for you. And so you're consistent across the board. And I went and, you know, I told you I read the book, but I went and bought 2 more copies. They haven't come yet, but I plan on bringing them down to the property and giving one to the leasing manager and one to the maintenance manager, you know, for them to read. So,
yeah,
I think it was awesome how you spent time to educate the frontline employees on not just, you know, hey, what should you be doing for your job, but you also started to teach them on, you know, why and the valuation of these properties and how what they're doing contributes to that increased valuation.
Yeah, teach them the formula, right? We look at NOI divided by cap rate and we come up with a value, right? That NOI is directly related to the manager pushing rents and the maintenance guy saving expenses. And now you've got 2 equal parts participating in building this NOI. But unless they see the big vision, and so what I would do is I would teach both the maintenance man and the property manager that formula. And when we go over the financials each month, we would sit down and go over that formula. I'm like, okay, based on your contribution, how is that NOI driven? Is it going up or is it going down? And they got fascinated when they realized that, hey, when we took over this building, it was worth $10 million. And within 6 months, it's worth $11 million. They're like, we've created $1 million in value and improved the cash flow. And I said, that's exactly right. And one of the maintenance guys like, well, I think I deserve a raise. And I said, if you can teach me the calculation and you show me that next month too, and you're right, I'll give you a raise. He's like,
very cool.
You need to know how to calculate the value of you, right? Which leads right into my very first chapter on that book, the value of you. What do you bring to the table? And what, you know, what can you do to help improve? Because as investors, right, Darren, you're an investor. I'm an investor. We put these little plans together, but who executes the plan? It's not really the property management company per se. Yes, we hire them, but who executes the plan? That manager and that maintenance guy are there every day, you know, 5 or 6 days a week, executing on your plan.
You're absolutely right. You are absolutely right. And I've definitely learned a lot from your book. And so talk to us about your perspective on, you know, making money for passive investors. So, you know, I talk to a lot of people reach out to me on Instagram and are looking to do their first syndication deal and they want advice. And I can hear that there's a lot of people that, I don't know, they just sound like they have the approach, like, I need to get money from other people to get my deal done. Mm-hmm. And like, maybe because I'm 50 years old, I have another company, I've done well, and you know, this new real estate thing over the last few years has charged me up and given me new energy. But one of the things that's gotten me really excited is that, you know, if I improve the property, help improve the property alongside the property management company, the on-site leasing staff, and the maintenance person, it's not just me and my family that benefit in that, you know, upon a capital event, whether that be a refi or a sale of the property, it's all the limited partners. So I have 44 limited partners. And to me, it gets me excited to know that, look, when we sell this for a profit, I'm going to help grow the wealth of these 44 other families. Yeah. So talk about how you view, you know, making money for passives.
Yeah. If you don't mind, I'm going to share a story relative to that. And it'll
absolutely
point, but we had a small 157 unit deal in San Antonio, and we were getting ready to sell it, and we did sell it, and we had it came to the point to distribute the money. My previous business partner called the investor and said, "Hey, look, we're about to sell this thing, and you know you're making way too much money. We did most of the work."
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the guy said, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "Well, I think you're really not entitled as much money because, you know, we did most of the work." And that investor called me. He's like, "Dude, what is up with your partner?" I'm like, "I don't know what you're talking about." He's like, "He called me and said this." I'm like, "Well, first of all, we have a partnership agreement, and whatever we've agreed to distribute to you, which in this case was 75% of the profits, we are going to honor that." He goes, "Glenn, I knew that if I called you, you would say that." I said, "Of course." I said, "It's our job to make you money. I can't decide, or nobody else can decide whether you've made too much money or not. We as syndicators, it's our responsibility to make you money. And if we do that, we get rewarded, right? That's why we sponsor deals. That's why we put things together." So I said, "Of course, we're going to distribute exactly what the partnership said." He goes, "Thank you very much." I went back to my business partner and I'm like, "Why did you say that to him?" He's like, "Well, I just feel like he's making too much money and we did all the work." Like, it's our job to do all the work. That's what we do. So they get paid first, we get paid second. And if we're successful, guess what? They're going to trust us. So my point, Darren, is if you're going to take other people's money and you're going to have limited partners on a deal, as sponsors, it's our job to be true to our word, but also to put their needs above our own. And when you do that, that's why I've done 30 deals, right? It keeps coming back because right. They're grateful that we've made them money. Now, not all deals make money. You know, I mean, I've been in 3 deals that just didn't make money. And we, you know, they all got their money back before we did. And I got a big goose egg. I actually lost money. But, you know, that's still not a bad run if you can do 27 highly successful deals and 3 that were not. So
right. And so on that, I just want to make one clarification that partner that you're referring to is a partner from a while ago in a different, not, you know, your current partnership teams.
Yeah. Now that's one of the reasons I left that partnership is things like that, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's not my reputation, my culture. It's not who I am. And this business is based on relationships. And like I referred earlier when, you know, Mr. Black pointed me out and said, you know, this is the kind of guy that Glenn is, you know, and he sold me that deal and he introduced me at that mastermind. That's what I'm in this business for. I'm not in the business for an investor to say, "Yeah, your partner screwed me on a deal." So,
right. Absolutely. All right. Here's another thing you talk about in the book. Be brave and go for it. So talked to a lot of people and look, it's smart to get educated, you know, read books, listen to podcasts, meet other successful investors, pick their brain. But at some point, you're never going to have 100% certainty. At some point, you got to pull the trigger. So talk about that.
And let me refer to you on Encinal. It was a 200 unit deal down in San Antonio. I was approached by the bank. You know, this potential investor didn't want to buy it. So the bank was getting ready to foreclose on it. And as an operator, they called me and said, "Glenn,
what's it going to take to fix this apartment complex? And I said, let me do some analysis. Came back. I'm like, dude, you really got to spend $1 million to, if you really want to get this property back on course. And they're like, we're a bank. We're not investors. We're going to foreclose. We're not going to put $1 million. We'll just take our losses. And I said, hey, bank, why don't you carry a note back for me? Go ahead and foreclose. Carry a note back. I'll put $1 million in the deal. And you know what they said, Darren? Like, well, do you have $1 million? I'm like, no, I don't have $1 million. I'm a W-2A. I mean, I'm a property manager. But I said, based on my experience, I know how to fix this problem. And that's why you called me and you want my opinion. And they're like, where are you going to get $1 million? And I'm like, I'll ask some people for it. So Darren, I went and raised $1 million. But guess what? Out of 9 people that I asked, or 10 people that I asked, 9 of them said no. And you know why they said no? Because it was my first deal.
Right.
What a huge hurdle, right? It's like, no, no, no. But every no that I got, I'm like, well, do you know somebody that might want this because it's a great return? And they said, yes, call so-and-so, so-and-so. But actually, at the end of the day, we raised money from people I didn't even know, that I was not familiar with, but they came from the people that told me no. So you just got to push forward. And I tell that story because at one moment, the bank said, well, if we're going to lend you this money and we're going to carry a note back, we want a commitment fee. And I went and I said, well, how much is the commitment fee? And at this point, it was like, I don't know, $75,000. So I went to my wife and I said, honey, we got to write a check for $75,000. The commitment fee was $150,000, right? So a partner was going to put up half and I was having to put up half. But Darren, you're never going to guess how much money I had in my checking account at that time.
No, I don't.
$75,000 that I had saved.
Oh, wow. So it pretty much took you down to
This is it, right? I mean, it was this check represented my wife and I's savings. And when you're working as a W-2 and you've got 5 kids and a mortgage, it's very difficult to get ahead working for a W-2. And I talked to my wife, we prayed about it, and she's like, you know what? If we're ever going to do it, this is the time to be brave and do it. And there's no looking back. And she looked at me. She's like, do you feel confident that you could turn this around? And I said, yes. She said, let's do it. So we wrote a check, took our checking account down to a very, very small balance in our checking account. And we were all in. Then we raised the money, closed on that deal. We sold it in month 12, right? So I was able to survive 12 months on an asset management fee. But you need to understand, Darren, at that point in my life, I was living on a shoestring budget in a very small rental house. And I didn't have a lot of overhead. My kids had all kind of left the nest. I was done paying child support. Like my wife said, if we're ever going to do it, now's the time to do it. We sold that deal and I made 4 times my annual salary at the property management company.
Wow.
You know, I mean, I was making $100,000 a year, right? And I made $400,000 on one deal. It was my cut after the investors got paid. And I'm like, it was like a 48 IRR. That's why, right? It was a big IRR. The investors won huge. And then I won huge, you know, because I got to participate in the upside. Guess what happened after that, Darren? Those investors that passed on the deal, their friends that they referred them to called and bragged about me.
Right.
Because they said no. Now I'll call them here. Like, look, I know I said no because it was your first deal, but do you have any more? I'm like, yeah, I got more. So now I was able to buy deal 2, deal 3, 4, 5, 6, and all that other stuff. So
it's fantastic. You know, it's not the ideal to have to, you know, empty the bank account and go all in. But you know, it's not just in real estate, and it's entrepreneurs in general. There's a lot of stories like that where, you know, people had to take a risk to get in the game. Yeah. And actually, when I spoke to your business partner, David Tupin, you know, that mastermind where you guys met, I asked him, I said, well, how did you even have the money to pay for that? He said, I put it on a credit card.
Yeah.
And, but you know what? He took a risk and then he developed a relationship with you. And now the two of you have been running, you know, and yeah, killing it. So,
you know, what's cool about that, Darren, is because I liked David and we did this deal together and I got an acquisition fee. I actually wrote him a percentage of that acquisition fee to him. And he's a smart kid. One, that was the biggest check he'd ever gotten at one time. right? Mm-hmm. It was not a very big check. Well, it was a big check, right? But it wasn't that big. I'll just tell you, it was 30 grand, right? So he put 20 in his pocket and he reinvested the other 10 into the same deal we had just bought.
Oh, wow. So
he's an investor and he got an acquisition fee and he didn't have to really take money out of his checking account. He's like, I like this. I said, how would you like to do this on steroids? Like, let's not do a small deal. Let's do big deals where acquisition fees, you know, 200 grand and we're investing our own money into the deal and we're participating right alongside our investors. And he's like, I like that even more. That's cash flow. So David is all over this. I mean, he loves this stuff. And so does Mike, you know, so it's kind of fun.
So, you know, one thing that Dave is really good at is putting himself out there.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you talk about in here is, you know, let people know what you're doing, you know? Yeah. So talk about that a little bit in terms of what you're, don't be shy. Tell people what you're doing.
Yeah. That's tough for me, Darren. I'll be honest with you. I don't like the limelight. I don't like to brag. When I came up with this title of this book, Maintenance Man to Millionaire, my wife's like, it sounds like you're bragging.
The and word like, millionaire. I could see that, you know, it could attract somebody that would read it that may not have read it. You know, if it was a more, you know, subtle title.
Yeah.
And it could change his life.
Yeah. I put a lot of thought and prayer into that, you know, Maintenance Man to Millionaire. And I came up to it because really, you know, the footer on the book says, you know, real estate wealth creation for everyday people, right? The lessons that are in the book are just for everyday people. And so I was not very good at stepping out and explaining, you know, who I am and limelight and all that. But Dave Toopin actually taught me the importance of social media. You know, he was with me when I did my very first Facebook Live. It's kind of sad, but he's like, push this button,
right?
Post and everybody can see it and it's live. And, you know, and I'm like, this is cool. So I'm doing more of those. I'm doing these, like Darren, you invited me to participate in your podcast. I think in the past I would say no. I actually wrote a book because people encouraged me to do it. And I was always like, nah, I don't know. You need to, because it'll inspire other people. So really, you just have to have the right attitude about it. Social media is good. I mean, you can inspire people. People inspired me before social media. It's because they shared all of their experience. I had mentors, right? The mentors that I looked up to, they weren't bragging. They were just good people. And I'm like, will you mentor me? And most good people were like, yes, I will. You know, yeah, I will.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good point. I fall right there with you. I'm 50 years old and I didn't get involved with social media until 3 years ago. But I thought it was like a little kid toy, you know, like Instagram, you know, for my kids. But I've met so many great people through it. You know, I probably wouldn't have met David if I wasn't on Instagram. And then if, you know, I went and had that meeting in Austin and me and you probably wouldn't have met, you know, so.
Really, David and I are at opposites of the spectrum. I'm just getting into social media at a necessity. He loves it. You know,
he's out there for sure. And I'm going to get a chance to, you know, when I was on the episode with him, I asked him about this Secret X event that you guys do. And, so right there on the show, he invited me to come. And when we got off, we talked offline and I'm in. I'm coming in November. I'm looking forward to it.
Really a neat event, right? You go away to a fun destination, but you are around other like-minded entrepreneurs from, you know, a lot are in the multifamily and real estate world, but a lot of them are not. They're just there to really absorb the energy that comes from being around other entrepreneurs that are all trying to navigate through these changing times. What a great group of people to be around. I've been to a couple of them and have lots of takeaways, right? They called me the godfather because at that event, I was probably the most experienced and had probably the most, you know, apartments in my portfolio than most of them. But I had so many things I took away from these great, great people. And so are you going, Darren?
Yeah. So I put down my deposit. I booked my ticket, plane ticket. Yeah. So hopefully COVID doesn't get in the way and I'm looking forward to it.
Did they tell you why it's a secret and they call it Secret X?
No, but you know, I kind of like that. I don't have to, you know, think about it. I just show up and you guys tell me what to do.
The secret, because you're going to get there and you're like, where are we staying? You're like, we'll tell you when you get there.
And you're they'll tell you, well, what are we going to do? You'll find out when you get there, but you will not be disappointed. So there's some element that's a secret. That's part of the fun. It's part of the anticipation.
I like it. So Glenn, talk about fear. You know, we talked about a little bit when people are afraid to pull the trigger on the first real estate investment, but you know, most people, you know, they get afraid, you know, certain things in their life they're afraid of. So talk about how fear has impacted you and how you were able to push past that fear, even though you had it.
Yeah. I would tell you that this answer is probably not the right one for everybody, but I'll tell you my personal experience. When I was managing apartments for a W-2 as an employee, I've been laid off from two different companies due to cutbacks or whatever reasons. And I really wanted to do my own deals for a long, long time, but I had child support. I had kids that I had, you know, my wife and I had kids and I had a mortgage. And really, I didn't step out into this world out of fear. I was afraid of failing. And it was because of the years that I participated in and years of learning experience and watching other people. There's a couple things that happened. I watched people that made a lot of money in real estate, but I was doing all the property management for them. I just had to write them the check. And that's really frustrating. And then there were other times where I'd been laid off my job. And so I'm gaining experience, but I just didn't really have what it took to jump in with both feet. Because I had fear. And I think that's natural for a lot of people.
Absolutely. Right?
Even if you've worked really, really hard, call it for 10, 20 years, and you have a little nest egg, you have a fear that if I invest in this deal, it might not go well, which is true. It might not go well and you could lose your money. But if you put your money with a good operator, good sponsor, you know, he's going to lose money too. So chances are, if he's a good operator, a good sponsor, you're not going to lose your money. So at some point, you've got to overcome this fear of loss and look at opportunity. And that's a tough thing, Darren. It really is. It's tough for everybody.
It is. I completely agree with you. And, you know, I started my other business trading loan portfolios back in 2007. And some people have asked me, what was the hardest part about starting, you know, your business? And I said, signing the lease to the office space. Mm-hmm. And people are like, why? Like, was it a big financial commitment? Was it a long-term lease? Like what was so difficult about it? I'm like, no, it wasn't. I think it was probably only a year or 2 year lease. I mean, it wasn't a big office. I said, the hardest part was signing that lease because once I did, I had to tell my family, my friends, my colleagues, I'm in business. And the fear of failure, you know, was so hard to get over and just sign that lease and get into business. Now, once I was in my office and I'm dialing for dollars and I'm making phone calls, I realized, I'm like, you know what? I'm doing the same thing I was doing at my previous company, but 100% of the profit comes, you know, in comes to me and my family versus getting a smaller, much smaller commission. But that fear can paralyze you.
Yeah. It what you're talking about, the word is commitment. You were committed at that point. There was no looking back.
Right.
I have these little Glennisms at the end of each chapter of my book. And you know, that first chapter was the value of you. One of the things I put in there is begin to see your past as a store of knowledge and therefore value. Give yourself some credit for what you have already achieved, right? Because we are a series of all of our experiences, and chances are we're probably smarter than we think. We're probably better than we think, and we probably have more experiences than we really give credit to. But if you look back at all that, make a list of all the things you've learned, good and bad, you're probably a pretty smart person and you've probably worked pretty hard for what you have. And if you approach it that way, you may have more confidence than fear. And that's really what it is. It's a teeter-totter. Where are you putting your energy? In fear, or are you putting your energy in confidence? And when you made that lease, Darren, or you signed that lease, you may have had a little bit of fear, but guess what?
your confidence was enough on the scale to tip it to commitment.
Right.
There you go.
It's a great point. And that same thing could be applied to, you know, to people that reach out, you know, talk about getting into the real estate space. I have plenty of people that say, you know what, Darren, I think I might just want to start with a duplex or fourplex. And I said, that's fine, because anything you do is going to get you in the game and is going to give you experience. But you don't have to do that. Like, if you want to scale up and do larger, you can, but you have to partner with an experienced guy that already has experience. And so then there's mindset, you know, shift that has to take place in that individual where they actually feel that value in themselves, that worth in themselves, that, you know, why would somebody that's experienced want to partner with me? You know, I haven't done it before, but you're saying, look at everything that you've accomplished up to then. You do have value, and you have to figure out how can you add value to that other person.
Yeah. And you know, for your listeners, this may be an opportunity to capitalize on the look back, right? I mean, let's say that somebody wants to buy a fourplex or a 10-plex and they just don't have the money, right? And let's say that this person is an electrician or a painter, right? That electrician, how many homes, businesses, business owners, people have you come in contact with in the last 5 years that think the same way you do? I'd sure like to buy a little 10, 12-plex for retirement, but I have no money. Or you're a painter. How many homes have you been in painting for homeowners that are in the same boat, right? I mean, if they're hiring you to paint their home, chances are it's because they have enough money to pay you, and otherwise they'd be doing it themselves. So really look back. I mean, there's probably a whole bunch of potential investors that you come in contact with every day that you just haven't looked around, and they're right there with you. And they want, so maybe you just talk about, hey, I'm going to do this someday. And if they say, yeah, if you ever come across a good deal, let me know. Well, gosh, start writing all those down. And guess what? Before you know it, you got 20 friends that all have $10,000 and you got enough money to buy yourself a little 12-plex.
That's right. That's incredible advice. It really is. Because there are so many people, you say it on the bottom of your book, you do. It says real estate wealth creation for everyday people. But I think that there's so many people that they just can't vision themselves doing it. But you just gave them a pathway.
Yeah, right there. So a good little golden nugget, right? And they're all there. They're already there, a circle of influence of people, and they're all like-minded. So if you're thinking about buying a 12-plex and you just have a little bit of money, chances are so are all the other friends in your circle.
That's awesome. So Glenn, what do you like to do outside of business? I know you've got the Gold Wing. You guys like to... Yeah. Ride the motorcycle. Is that kind of the main thing, or what do you guys like to do?
Well, my wife she's probably thinks I'm a little psycho because I have all these little hobbies that I like, and there's way too many. I've been boating my whole life. So my wife and I have a boat. We've had big boats. We've had little boats. We've had boats for 20 years. I love being on the water. I don't care if I'm just sitting there catching a fish, or if I'm pulling kids on tubes, or if I'm just drop an anchor, listening to music. I love being out on the boat. So I do that. You know, fortunately here in Austin, Texas, I have the opportunity to do that, you know, 9-10 months out of the year.
Do you have a boat on Lake Travis?
Yeah. And I keep the boat in my garage because it's small enough I could tow. It's a 24-foot jet boat that made by Yamaha. So it's kind of a wakeboard boat, but it's kind of an all-around boat.
Awesome. Well, I always say it's I like to have friends that have boats. So I know that you have one now, so I could call you up and say, I'm coming down. Let's go out.
Darren, this is a funny story, but I invite people all the time to go boating with me. And half of them are like, I'd love to go, but I'm just too busy. You know, so I'm like, gosh, who wants to go boating with me? You know, because my wife's done boating. She's gone for 20 years. She's like, what are you going to do? I'm like, I don't know. Drop anchor, tube, fish. She's like, no, I'll pass. So now I'm trying to find people to go with me. I can't find enough people to go boating. So Darren, you're invited.
All right, good. I will come down. We'll go out for sure.
Oh, I love that. We also have wave runners. This afternoon, I'm going mountain biking with my son and son-in-law. So I love to mountain bike. And I've got 100 acres. And believe it or not, the weirdest thing is I love going out there. I love to feed the cattle. Yesterday, I was driving the tractor and moving some old, you know, lumber to a burn pile. you know, my wife and I like to travel. So we've been to those Secret X ones, the last couple that they've had. We've been to those. We have five grandchildren. So we have sleepovers, you know, in the evenings on Fridays, and we go do fun stuff on Saturdays with the grandkids. By the way, I don't really boat on Saturdays because it's so busy. So I can go any day
during,
I want.
During the week, right. Yeah.
There's nobody on the lake, got the whole lake to ourselves, the water smooth. It's so nice.
That's what I do with golfing. I typically golf once a week, and I golf in the middle of the week when there's not as many people out there.
Yeah. I love to go hunting. You know, I love to dove hunt. I like to, you know, shoot pigs. I feel like I'm doing an honor to Texas by eliminating pigs if I can.
So where is your 100-acre ranch? Is it within a short drive of you?
It's about a mile from my house. So
Really?
That I keep at my house. I actually just jump on the road and ride the side-by-side down there. I got a Polaris ATV.
And I just
go down there.
You would have guests to your ranch, my son is a sophomore at Texas A&M, and look, we all have different dreams, right? And for him, his vision is when he can afford it, he wants to have a ranch and be able to fish on the ranch and, you know, have ATVs and all that. And that's something that is, etched in his mind. So,
yeah. Well, why don't you bring him down? We'll go boating. Bring your son. And then we can go out there. And has he ever shot skeets before, like a skeet thrower?
No, he's like, Dad, you know, we moved here when I was 9. You're not a hunter. I met so many people that go hunting with their dad. And I'm like, son, look, if we find somebody that will take us out and can teach us, I will go. But yeah. I don't have the experience. So
I do. Bring your son and we'll have a lot of fun.
Awesome. Awesome. Hey, what's the next big stretch goal for Glenn?
You know, honestly, retirement. And for retirement means that my two business partners, David and Mike, are going to take over the company. And I'm going to go from being the percent ownership that I have now all the way down to 20%. They'll own 80% of the company. But we're going to have, you know, X amount of units in the portfolio, X amount of dollars in the checking account. And then my next chapter is to try and work maybe, you know, 2 to 3 days a week because I want to, not because I have to. That's the next biggest thing, right? So
when does that happen?
That's on a 5-year plan or less. Yep.
Awesome.
And really what I'm trying to do is get Mike and David to have enough life experiences and actual experiences relative to these multifamily deals under their belt before I step away. Because I believe that my 30 years of experience, as I share and talk about transactions with my partners, we're avoiding some significant pitfalls and mistakes that a lot of sponsors are making. And I don't want them to learn that on their own. I want to say, you know, here's what I did wrong on this one transaction. We're faced with that again. Let's do it this way because that'll avoid. I'll give you a little nugget. It was not secret, but you know, in today's environment, when we put together deals, we're raising a rainy day fund where just excess working capital. That's a hard conversation to have with investors because they're like, usually you have a line item for every dollar that's being spent. Here's your legal fee. Here's your appraisal fee. Here's your third party fee. Here's the acquisition fee. And here's an extra $150,000 that goes to nothing. Like what? Yeah, it's for nothing. Well, how does that work? Well, I've learned over 30 years that not everything goes as planned every time. And sometimes there are surprises. And you can either get caught with your pants down, or you can do a cash call, or you can neglect it. But you can't ignore it. And nobody likes cash calls. Right. And neglect it, that makes things worse. So you better have a rainy day fund in today's environment for the unknown. And trust me, that's come in handy more times than not.
That's huge. You approach things a lot differently than a lot of people I speak to. You're just in it for the long game. You just are very relationship focused, and I don't know. You're just focused on, you know, let's do the right thing.
The right thing. Yeah, do the right thing.
So, Glenn, I thank you so much for coming on. How can people get in contact with you if they want to get in contact with you?
You know what? I'm going to just throw this out there. My cell phone, I'll put it out there. 512-937-5964. And then my email is Glenn with two N's @obsidiancapitalco.com.
Fantastic. Glenn, yeah. Again, thank you so much. I can't wait to see you guys in, you know, Secret X that, and like I said, I got chills reading your book, and I told my wife at some point I'm going to do business with this guy. So I hope that we can make that happen.
I would really like to do that, Darren. So, you know, and I believe we will, you know, I mean, you're the type of guy that if I have a good deal, I'll put it in front of you and either you can invest or you and your friends can invest. But there's a whole chapter in my book about doing business with people you want to do business with. I mean, there's people that we feel like you have to do and you don't. You can do business with who you want to do business with.
Exactly. Well, you're a good guy. I'm so glad that we came in contact. And listeners, I hope you enjoyed that one. And until next time, bye now.
Thank you for listening to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show at darrenbatchelder.com. If you liked the episode, please provide us with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. If you already provided us with a 5-star review, then thank you, and please share the show with a friend.